Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Hey, who's that in our third seat? A very funny comedian, the host of the podcast, the Frogcast, Pod Yourself a Gun, and now Pod Yourself the Wire. It's Matt Lee.
Hey, I'm here, baby. I'm here. And, good to be back. I was here just the other day.
Filling in.
Were just like, man, Matt, you got to come back immediately.
Yeah.
Because you just crushed it. In the guest host.
More Lieb.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, more Lieb. More Lieb the better. So I'm excited.
More Lieb time.
That's right.
If I could get a little more Lieb time on that.
Yeah, a little more Lieb time. And thanks for plugging the, the Pod Yourself the Wire, which is, you were on Pod Yourself a Gun, our Sopranos rewatch podcast, and we did all the episodes, and now we're at The Wire. So I'm going to need both of you guys to come on and talk about The Wire at some point.
It is my favorite show of all time.
Absolutely.
It's a great show. And here's the thing. If you're listening to this right now and you're like, oh, I haven't seen those shows, doesn't matter. You can still listen to the podcast. And if you're like, I don't want to listen to the podcast, that's fine. The most important thing is just giving us 5 stars in a review on the Apple Podcast Store. That's all I care about.
There you go.
Subscribe.
Yep.
And then press play on the episode and then mute it.
And then walk away.
Literally,
it's an act of charity to do those things. Please help. I have a baby.
Yeah. There aren't that many movie, TV podcasts that I will give the... Go ahead and listen to this even if you're not watching the show. But yours is one of them because it is a comedy show and it's fun. It's fun to listen to. Although you should watch the fucking Wire and the Sopranos.
You should absolutely watch the Wire.
It's weird to not watch those shows. Yeah. Just because it's like, what else are you watching? What's in the way of those?
Right.
Nothing you're watching is as good as either The Sopranos or The Wire. And nothing you're listening to is as good as those two rewatch podcasts, Pod Yourself a Gun and Pod Yourself the Wire. So please help.
With the obvious exception of the Daily Zeitgeist.
Right. I was going to say that.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't want to start a beef here, Matt. But
no, there's no beef, but it's like, you know, you guys don't rewatch enough TV on this podcast. Right. I think, has been the main problem I've seen in various Daily Zeitgeist comment sections. Yeah. They're like, how come they're not talking about my favorite story?
Just exactly. Completely misunderstanding it as a Wire rewatch podcast.
I don't remember any of these episodes about The Wire where the queen was dead.
That is truly what you get when you like launch a podcast. The first few weeks of episodes of reviews are just like, you know, reviewing a different podcast that your title made them think your show was going to be.
Yeah.
Exactly. Wait, Matt, episodes. Either the one where the wiretapping goes completely haywire and blows up in everybody's face, or Omar's first on-screen gay kiss.
Iconic moments
for me.
We just did the first Omar gay kiss episode. Unfortunately, you can't do that one. But there's plenty of The Wire Goes Haywire episodes. That's the thing about The Wire. It's mostly a show about, you know, wires. Various types.
If you haven't seen it, they do constantly say things like, this has gone haywire and looks like we've got our wires crossed and too much coffee for me. I'm wired.
I'm wired. It's mostly a show of wire puns.
Choice.
It's a weird to have such a serious and important show be filled with random
titular wire
buns. Oh man, you know what my favorite magazine is? Wired. Anyways, let's solve this murder.
Yeah. Joelle, I'm so excited for the segments where you're going to be coming on, telling us about all the movies you've pre-screened for us. That will all be happening soon. What is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
Okay, yeah. So I tried to come up with something. So most of my search history, which I'd never really looked at, was about like things you can do with tahini. So that's not that interesting. Like that's like the most interesting thing I had. Or it's like, who's that guy on the TV show? That's basically all I use it for, is like when I'm watching TV, I Google like, you know, who this character actor is. But my friend, so I was asking my friend last night, and he was like, well, you could tell him, how much do you pee in your lifetime? That's something he Googled yesterday. This is a younger guy. He's like 24. So he's into that sort of thing. And it turns out you pee about 18,000 gallons over the course of your life, your average person. And that's about a half a swimming pool.
So wow.
I thought that was sort of interesting.
Wow. So no matter how hard you try your whole life, you could only fill half a swimming pool with your pee.
I mean, you could probably I feel like, you know, you could try harder and get up a little bit, but your average user, you know,
I don't know. Why. I'm like kind of crestfallen hearing that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's like not enough pee for me. Yeah. I feel like I can do better than that. Is that an Olympic swimming pool?
Well, there's like an average swimming pool. I don't know what that means exactly. Like an average swimming pool is 35,000 gallons. So I feel like I could fill the swimming pool by the end if I make it like a long time.
Yeah. So. If you work hard, stay hydrated, continue. There is a power washer going in the background just for added effect. But
your neighbor's trying to fill a pool right now.
Yeah.
I'm almost there, man. I'm almost there. I mean, because they say you do, maybe you pee between 4 and 10 times a day if everything's going right. Okay.
Is that right?
That's what they say.
That feels like a lot. 4 and 10. I guess 10 feels like a lot. 4 feels, but maybe not.
But I mean, we all have different size bladders. We all have different, you know, our peak, we all come from different pee backgrounds, you know? Mm-hmm. So sometimes you like to pee, and the minute you have a sensation, other times you're working and you're like, I think I can get away with a couple more
minutes,
hours.
Yeah. Just burst. I like to, it speeds. If you've ever heard this show and been like, are they on like 1.5 time? Like, why is this like double speed?
That's you doing your the show's about to wrap pee.
That's me having to pee. Yeah. But anyways, fascinating stuff. I figured Pete's going to do something about how much we pee in our lifetimes. I just knew that was
coming. Knew that coming in. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm also curious, what can you do with tahini though? I'm also interested in tahini.
I mean, I started eating these, like, not because I'm like a particularly healthy person at all, like, but I just started eating these macrobiotic lunches years ago that are like, you know, just steamed vegetables and like tofu and this tahini sauce. And I got it, like everything else, you know, you kind of get sleepy after lunch, and this would just, you'd feel like running through a wall. And so I don't know. Then I got obsessed with tahini. I could put tahini on anything, like, just, you know, so I'm always trying to figure out just different versions of, and again, that's why I didn't choose it, because it's kind of boring. You know, I just like, I'm like, can you put tahini instead of, you know, mustard on this thing? And, you know, like, just trying to come up with different dressings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I love tahini. Yeah. And I remember when I found out it's like in desserts too, I was like, this thing is the most fucking malleable sauce I've ever seen.
They make a healthy Nutella that my wife ordered, but it's all sesame tahini based. And there's like a little chocolate in it, but it's great. It's like, it's amazing. I got to remember the brand name, but I eat that like just out of the jar.
The chocolate hummus really fucks me up, because it does taste so good. But I don't know. Like, my brain doesn't know what to do with it. It's just
is that real? Are you making a joke?
Yeah, chocolate hummus is... No. Chocolate hummus is like something you can get at Ralph's. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing Trader Joe's for the first time. Like, we're doing too much Trader Joe's. And then every listener was like, you think it looks and sounds fucked up, and then you eat it, and then you realize you are fucked up.
Yeah. And then you realize you are the one.
You are the fucked up one. Yeah. The other reason I bring it up is the salt. Have you ever had like a millionaire bar with tahini and caramel?
That's no, like the thing. That's all right, though.
My God. You make your own salted caramel with like a cookie base and like this caramel tahini filling, and it's like vegan, excellent dessert.
Wait, what do you mean you make your own?
I've never bought a millionaire bar, but someone like made it like a home recipe, like they made it on their own. And ever since then, it's one of my favorite desserts that I've had involving tahini too.
All right, I'm Googling that right after.
Yeah,
right
millionaire bars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Wow. Millionaire bar. I'd never even heard of that.
Yeah, super easy to make too.
I maxed out at the 100 grand bar. What is something you think is overrated?
Oh, wait, what did I write down? This is controversial. So I did not think I was going to jump right into controversy.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
That's something that, as an expert, I believe is overrated is recycling.
Okay.
Go on.
Okay, you didn't think I was going to say that. Now, I'm not saying don't recycle, but if you learn more about the
what our quote-unquote recycling
how
is,
effective recycling is, you will learn that it is a freaking disaster. The whole system is a hot mess, and recycling does not reach or even come close to reaching the goals we think it does. In a lot of ways, there's an argument it does more harm than good. Like, it takes a lot of fossil fuel emissions to recycle things, like to turn like aluminum or glass into new aluminum and glass. It actually, like, we have to pollute a lot to get that done. There's like so many issues with it.
Right.
So a solution, please keep recycling, but like even better, reduce your consumption and reuse the things that you consume. So like emphasis on reduce and reuse, recycling's overrated.
Yep. Mm. I was shamed by my reusable shopping bags, like the thick plastic ones that a lot of the stores got around like the thin bag ban with. They're like, well, now we give reusable ones out. And I was just like, I could make a submarine if I melted all this plastic down, like
it's
full
still
size.
Plastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And I don't throw it away too, because part of me's like, you can't recycle that shit. And I'm like, I don't want to waste it. So then eventually I am like able to use those a little bit better. But now I always bring my big ass like reusable bag with
you're
me
like
because,
canvas tote. Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because yes, I've been thoroughly just put into a state of panic over like how terrible I am with that kind of stuff.
Reduce and reuse, that's the way.
Yeah. Mm. And it's wild how much packaging stuff too like says it has like a recycling logo on it, yet you have to go take some things to like specialized places. Like, you can't just put that in like your city recycling can sometimes.
Wait, I learned, you will die. I recently learned, again, I just got a whole like proper education on this, so now I can speak as an expert. I recently learned that in like several states in this country, it is legal to put a recycling symbol on anything, even if it's not recyclable.
What?
Like, there's just a loophole, as a design? And people use the loophole.
They're like, it's just good marketing for recycling.
It's kind of like, it's kind of like saying, like, if you can figure out a way to recycle this, go ahead. Yeah, but we don't have a way.
Wow.
That is so American. It's wild. It is. Yeah. It is so exactly so American. Anyway, so like, don't think you're doing something by recycling. It is overrated. There are better ways. Reduce, reuse at a minimum.
Yeah. Right. I just like to collect those plastic bags that have the big recycling thing on it because it proves that I'm here to save the earth. As many of those as I can have.
Conscious.
It shows,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. what's something you think is underrated?
Underrated gravel bikes, which is a type of bike.
Oh, so the in-between bike. Yeah.
The in-between bike. It's like more comfortable because I was shopping for a bicycle and I was trying to decide, I've been like cycling a lot more and I wanted to up my bike game. So I was looking at these really expensive bikes and I'm like, I don't really know if I can spend this type because bikes are really expensive if I can spend this money on it. And basically what I was told is that for what I do, like what 50 to 60, 70 miles a week or whatever, like it's good
Damn,
to have
son.
A Yeah, that's right. And that's, and yeah.
Where are you going? Did you give up your car? What are you
And all gravel.
No,
who are you trying to impress?
I'm sorry. I drive it around on my car. I got a bike rack for my car and I put it on my car and I drive it around 50 to 70 miles.
Gotcha.
So you keep the odometer on so that like it just assumes that you're riding that fast. Right. Yeah. Exactly. That's fine.
This bike, oh man, like, this bike thinks I'm so cool.
I put on the Apple Watch. And so basically what I learned is that a gravel bike, especially now because streets are just such
awful
shit. And you are so streets are gravel. You know, big holes in them. And essentially it has a larger, slightly larger tire and it's a hybrid. So you can still go fast on the road if you want to, like, you know, if that's something you're into. But also when you go to these bumpy, more hazardous terrain things, you know, like you are still comfortable. Like you're not going to be shaken out of your mind. So if you're looking for a bike and you're not trying to like enter a major race, I really, really enjoyed it. Gravel bike.
It's a road bike. You don't have to trip about if you start seeing dirt in front of you, and it's a mountain bike that won't feel super fucking slow just on asphalt.
Yeah, perfectly put. Yeah. Yeah.
There you
exactly.
go.
And look, shout out all the bike Zeit gang, because I got a bike recently, but I got an electric bike just to kind of like zip around like where I live so I don't have to use my car. I was also looking at that thing, I'm like, God damn, these bikes are so much fucking money. But then at the end of the day, you're like, if I'm going to put a lot of time on it, then like you can kind of begin to rationalize like why a quality bike is that. But it'll be a long time since I buy a bike that is thousands of dollars.
Is there any way just everything is expensive right now? Like I feel like everyone I talk to who's like in the market for something, like my car lease is coming up and I like went and met with a Volvo dealer and they were like, yeah, so you're looking at like, it'll be like at least two times what you used to pay for your current car for the past 3 years. Like at least two times. They're like, yeah, it's the way the market is right now.
Is it?
Well, cars are right now, especially because of the tech supply chain stuff. That's definitely taking a hit.
Are we trusting that? I feel like we just gave everybody the license. We were just like inflation. And then everyone was like dope and raised their prices like three times the. Yeah.
I still go by the same thing where I'm like, if it's too much, I'm like, no. I ain't doing that.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm good.
I went to this one place where they were showing me a bike. It was $6,000.
Oh, my God.
In my vanity, I'm like, maybe these big legs of mine deserve a $6,000,
right.
Which is not even, it would financially ruin me if I bought a $6,000.
Was the salesman like, legs like those? Nah, you're going to need one of these $6,000 guys.
And then I started blushing and I lost my ability to see. And that's how you get me. And they had like electric, like the brakes were, the shifters were electric. So you don't have to press the shifter too hard. It's still a bike that you pedal
too much,
like,
of a luxury,
which is crazy. It's a crazy luxury. And I went to this place called ATX Bikes in Austin and they like found me a bike. He's like, you don't need any of this shit, like just get this bike. And I did, and it's been great.
Just get this bike, asshole.
This bike, take those plumpers coming out of your pelvis and put them on this bike. And I was like, that's the most disgusting way to speak I've ever heard. But
God. Oh man,
Los Cientos.
They're delicious.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the return of Q.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back, and we are joined by super producer Trisha Mukherjee.
Hello. Good to be here. Hi, everyone.
Yeah. So you, were reading through Dr. Ray's work and listening to her podcast, and you begged us to come on to talk to her about just kind of, you put together a nice story just like highlighting some of the really fascinating aspects of her work. So you want to take us through it?
Yes, of course. So I was reading about your work, Dr. Ray, and it was amazing. First of all, I would recommend that everyone listens to your podcast. Going Wild is the name, right?
Yeah. Going Wild with Ray Wynn Grant. That's right. Mm-hmm. Named it after myself.
Nice. Smart.
Good title.
And so I was reading, I was seeing all these really adorable pictures of you with baby bear cubs and with like snakes and lemurs and all these other animals. It was great. But as I was looking through these photos and just reading about your work the hard science part of it, as well as environmental justice, I was just thinking a lot about people of color in nature, in these fields that focus on the outdoors. I love the outdoors. I really like long distance cycling and trekking and all these other adventure sport type things. But it's so rare that I see other people of color while I'm doing these things. So I know that you've also talked about this a lot. I wanted to look into why this is, you know, the history behind people of color feeling unwelcome in the outdoors and what we can do about it today.
Yeah, you were talking about a book that you read, Black and Brown Faces in America's Wild Places.
Yeah, so it was just this book that I came across a long time ago, and it was just the most simple concept. It was just photos of people of color in nature, like happy walking, you know, imagine. Among the greenery.
Imagine and, that.
Yeah, like, and I was actually shocked to see it because it made me so happy, first of all. But I was like, why does this look weird? It shouldn't look weird. Mm. Like, why has society made right. this something to marvel at?
You know what, Trisha? There are some really beautiful photos of Dr. Martin Luther King and his family in like recreating in nature, and you never see them, right? Like, we always say we see the same pictures of Martin Luther King. Yeah. And like, these photos are beautiful, and they also seem like strange, like, oh, weird, like, you know, the 60s,
it's like, what was that photo
black
shoot?
Family, yeah, like in in the forest, you know? Mm. Yeah, it's just, it's society has given us this idea that like, you know, we've been socialized to believe that people of color don't exist in nature. We're like urban only.
Yeah. And like internalized it to the point where I even remember being like, nah, I don't do that. Like white friends would be like, we're going to go camp. I'm like, nah, I don't camp. Like, this is not, I have no concept of people that look like me doing that. So it never occurred to me to engage with nature like in that sense too. But I'm sure like anything in this country, we have, you know, we can draw lines back to an earlier time where we completely misunderstood our relationship to each other or the land, right?
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because I can remember even a few years ago in ads for companies like REI or Patagonia, all these outdoors brands, it was all white people. Yeah. And now they've slowly started to kind of realize that it's an issue. And you see more people of color in those ads, which gives me a lot of hope. I mean, I remember the first time I saw a South Asian person in one of those ads, and it was great. It's like, well, another one. But yeah, so it's changing. But if we go way back and we think about this idea of nature in general, we think about the white settlers that came to what is now the United States and how they really just tore apart the lifestyle of indigenous peoples who lived on the land before then. They thought of land as something that needed to be protected, preserved, something that you live in harmony with rather than exploit in this very capitalist settler mindset that eventually became the norm. And when settlers came, they introduced this idea of an untouched wilderness, you know, just trees and forests and rivers, somewhere where nobody lived. And if we dig a little deeper into that idea, you just see that that's not true because there are people who live with the land and they live on it, but it's still, you know, it's still respected. And a proponent of this idea was John Muir, who's a very famous environmentalist. I'm sure everyone's heard his name.
Sierra Club. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And he said that this land should be set aside for recreation to fulfill an emotional need for wild places, which I thought was just an absolutely ridiculous statement because there were so many people, especially indigenous peoples, who were kicked off that land. And like, what about their emotional needs and what about their emotional fulfillment?
Him constantly like romanticizing like the wild lands that were basically free of indigenous people, you know, really opened the door for this kind of like exclusionary thinking and like, who gets to enjoy the environment? Like, would always juxtapose like the beauty of the landscapes, but these dirty faced, half happy, you know, like just all kinds of like terrible derogatory statements about indigenous people, black people. And he always would say, like, he used a quote that these indigenous people, quote, seem to have no right place in the landscape, which we saw that kind of like extend to like especially like in colonial Africa as like game reserves are opened up. this same idea of like, oh, people have lived here for centuries. No, I don't know. This is a theme park for white tourists. Like the Maasai people were just kicked out of certain places. Like there's a lot of history of just like the same thinking of like, hi, nature, nobody should be here unless it's us just looking at it to just take a load off. And
that's also so reactionary. Like,
right.
I agree with what y'all are both saying. And I think John Muir is such a good example because he and his way are romanticized in our society because he was like thinking about solutions, right? Like there was a problem and he's like, oh, a solution is to do this. But I get frustrated when like, I feel like no one talks about the problem he was trying to find a solution for, right? The problem was that like white men on this continent, like decimated all of nature. And then at some point we're like, oh shoot. Like if we don't stop and like preserve a little bit, we're going to have none left. I have an idea. Like what if we asked John Muir to like create national parks for us? Like, so yeah, that was a solution. It one harmed people, you know, two, it didn't like work the way we wanted it to. It was completely unfair, unjust, and inequitable. But also like a better thing to do would be to like have like not done all of that like development of the land and destruction of, you know, wildlife and wild communities and wild places to begin with. And no one's talking about that because that was done by the same like social group of people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. Like Teddy Roosevelt was like, we need national parks. Teddy Roosevelt like killed countless animals. Like we cannot count how many wild animals he killed across the world. He killed so many animals like for fun, for sport, not to eat them. Right.
Right.
And then he's the same person being like, hey, like, let's do a national park thing. Like that's being environmentally friendly. Like what? Like these people were hypocrites and it is very unpopular in my line of work to call that out. So I appreciate y'all doing it. I appreciate y'all like trying to really reimagine how we talk about environmental history, especially from the American perspective. But, you know, just in general, like our society and like the environmental movement does not largely accept that these people were problematic.
Yeah, right. Which is wild because I remember at the time people were defending. I remember, you know, the head of the Sierra Club in the summer of 2020 was sort of like, hey, if we're going to talk about Fort Bragg and these Confederates and like renaming stuff, we should really look at people like John Muir and things like that. And a lot of people are like, we can't be applying these purity tests or trying to say, like, well, look at all the good that he did. Sure. But to then like ignore that and also say that the way the early conservation movement was even looking at like what people's relationship was to the land kind of put a lot of terrible momentum behind like this ideology now is obviously worth like examining. Does that like tension, like, so what's, as it stands, right, is, does that tension still exist between conservationists where some people are like, we just got to keep this nice and that's it, just conserve that, versus people like, oh, we're completely ignoring the heaviest part of this
conversation?
It's a mess.
Really? It's a mess. And I don't want anyone to think that like it's doom and gloom and there's no reason to have hope. Like that's not it. But basically the model of conservation, like to Trisha's point, has always been a neo-colonial, white supremacist, patriarchal model. Always. Mm-hmm. Like we don't have a new one that is like globally accepted. And so I would say like these days there are enough like revolutionary radical thinkers in the conservation movement that are like helping to like reject these ideas. But in general, like conservation is still a neocolonial force, like both within and outside of this country. And I'll just like add in a little science tidbit, right?
Please.
Like instead of the like social stuff, like one of the main science tidbits that is also super challenging is that the majority of wild animals, and in particular, like large carnivores, like I study, like the big ferocious, like toothy ones, live outside of protected areas, like most of them, like almost all of them.
Really?
So it's like many of them live in a protected area. Like if you go to Yellowstone, you're going to see some bears and that is cool. But most bears live outside of Yellowstone and outside of Yosemite and outside of these places in places that are not protected areas that are just like regular spots. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I feel
and
like
so,
you,
yeah. Yeah. And so it's like obviously, the protected area system hasn't been a good model for many, many social reasons, but mm-hmm. also for like actual scientific reasons, it's not like hitting it.
They're like these animals, like these animals,
like they're not like fenced. Yeah, these animals aren't like, oh, like I just stepped outside my boundary. Right. Like, let me pull up a map and make sure.
World approach reroute, to like conservation.
That's so funny.
Yeah. It's like largely not working, and yet like protected areas have popped up all over the world because a few of these men, like from 120 years ago, thought like, you know, didn't think twice and just like went for it.
And to Miles, your point about like there was a reckoning with the, you know, white supremacist John Muir and, you know, his role in founding the Sierra Club. So I just went to Yosemite with my family, and it felt like we had traveled to like a monument to John Muir. Like parks and trails had signs quoting his wisdom, and there were, you know, stories about him coming to the land for the first time, like he had just discovered it, you know?
Yeah.
He looks like a Confederate general. And it's, you know, you can't decouple like his white supremacist viewpoint from all of that. And the work that he's deified for it involves ignoring or outright being hostile towards, you know, the people who were already there.
Yeah, do they have his quotes about how he spoke about black people in Georgia when he first encountered them?
They did not.
I don't think they have that.
How well trained they were, as he put it. Yeah, like that's the funny thing is like, we have this way of being like, but all this other good stuff, but all this other good stuff. And that's true. That's true too. And so is this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you have to reckon with all of that. And you have to say how influential this person was and how much, like, even when they say like, well, he never like actually supported some of these other racists that like hung on to every word he said. It's like, yeah, but he never actually denounced it either. It.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates the space for other people to be like, well, I don't know, maybe.
And he knew that creating protected areas was destroying communities and like, you know, whether it was like direct or indirectly killing people, like literally like ruining people's lives. It was people of color. So it was like, it's okay.
Yeah. Well, the very first like public park, it wasn't officially Yosemite yet because it was way back when, but it was where Yosemite is now. And that park was created by literally just slaughtering hundreds of indigenous people to like have that as a space of enjoyment.
And like,
hey, what could be more American?
Yeah. It's
like
awful.
On this place where you ignore, like you're having a good time, willfully ignore how this space came about and go on with your day. Good day.
And let me add, because, and this is like complicated for me as someone who like holds a belief system, but still has to like work within the confines
that space,
of like the system that my job is in. But like indigenous people still exist, like they existed in abundance in the past, but like they still exist in abundance, and so like it's not like they were slaughtered and died and now we have these national parks. Like folks deserve to have their land back, you know. Like they're asking for it, they're demanding it, like it goes without saying it is deserved. And so, you know, someone like me, I often struggle with feeling so hypocritical because I work in protected areas, right? Like I like study large carnivores in protected areas while holding the view that like, if I had any power here, I would give the land back. Right. Like it doesn't make sense to me to like be ringing the bell of like, yay, we're doing better. We're creating conservation solutions. We have more animals, when like people and communities are still obstructed from engaging in and stewarding their land the way that they want to. I have a good feeling that like a lot of indigenous communities would choose to like do wonderful quote unquote conservation work. They probably wouldn't call it conservation, but just like conservation-ish work on these landscapes. But even if they didn't want to do that, they should be able to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And it's really like a tension that I have within myself where I'm like, okay, you know, sometimes I try to give myself a break and say, this is the best I can do, is like do my job within the confines of the structure. But land back in America, at least, is like something that like I think the people who believe in it don't necessarily have the power to make it come true. And that's really, really frustrating because there are people out there who have the power.
And land back is quite literally like anathema. Like it's the antithesis of manifest destiny. It's like, what, land back?
Right.
No, we got here being like, God told me I could have this. And now you're saying take backs? No. Like, I feel like that's.
Yeah, like people feel like that's like unfair. You know, I have to say I do a lot of work in like parts of like rural American West, which is always an adventure.
Yes.
And it is interesting because there's like a lot of folks out there, like, you know, again, I'll use like some cattle ranchers as an example, who are really kind of grappling with the fact that like it's an uncertain future in cattle ranching, right? Like just because of the economy and society and just the market, like it's just not, it used to be super profitable and it's not, that guarantee isn't still there. And so a lot of folks are kind of like, oh, should our family continue to cattle ranch? Should we like sell our land? And I just like sit around there being like, wow, like a lot of people still consider this to be their land because their great, great granddaddy, you know, took it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
But like, I don't see people having conversations about like the equitable choice here.
Right. Which I'd imagine there's a scientific argument for all of that. You know, like I can't imagine science would argue against it. Like, nah. They're good custodians of that land, and we shouldn't.
There is a scientific argument. I mean, worldwide, globally, one thing that we know and that we have been able to prove as scientists is that poverty and environmental wellness are directly linked to each other. So we cannot necessarily achieve like a healthy environment without alleviating or eliminating poverty. And we can't alleviate or eliminate poverty without creating a healthy functioning environment and healthy ecosystems. And so land back is a really good argument for alleviating poverty in many places, which thus helps the environment be healthier and stronger and more resilient. And yet it's like, it's just like easy, you know, it's hard to break out of these molds at which we've been taught and to really decolonize this whole perspective and approach to conservation. But really, like, when communities of people are healthy and well, the environment is more likely to be healthy and well, and vice versa.
Right. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll keep talking about this.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back. And let's talk about TikTok.
Yeah. Speaking of hating the fucking status quo.
Yeah. Because so a recent study from UCLA asked teens what kind of stories they wanted to see on TV. And they were like, TV? Huh?
Oh, what? For real?
Okay.
I mean, you mean like that shit my aunt watches? but I mean, right. It really shows, right, that like, it's the results aren't really surprising given how savvy like younger people are. One of the biggest takeaways that they were talking about was that in terms of television content, they do not want to see aspirational shows. Less than 5% of the respondents in the survey said they were interested in shows about kids with like impossible, lavish lifestyles, like, you know, like Gossip Girl Entourage, yeah, type shit where it's like, whoa, look, oh my God, take me to your world of excess. Not really into that anymore. A whopping 21% want shows that deal with real world issues like family dynamics or social justice. They don't want sanitized portrayals of the world they're experiencing, essentially. They don't care to see these like very, you know, cookie cutter, like sort of versions of what they see as like a world wrought with problems that need to actually be like wrangled with. Goes on to say, quote, Hollywood has built its young adult content on the belief that teens want to see glamorous lifestyles and rich and famous characters. But our research suggests the opposite is true. We know from this and our race and class in teen TV study, the majority of teens feel isolated and upset when media lack accurate identity representations.
Mm-hmm.
Like they look at that shit and go, this is not real. Who is that? That's not a real person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nearly 27% wanted more black male heroes and 35% wanted more white male villains. And rather than aspirational stories, they want underdog stories about people beating the system or overcoming oppression.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like truly the status quo of like, and everyone lived happily ever after in their impossible apartments in the Upper West Side. Like that's not really moving the needle. And I think a lot of, like, I think young people have felt like this for a while. Millennials, we didn't really have any options. So we were always just like, I don't know what's on the big seven channels.
Right.
And we'll kind of take that for what it is. But because of social media, it's offering a lot of people different options. Like, 55% of these kids said that they prefer social media in terms of like entertainment because it's where the authentic content lives.
Right. It's there's not the barrier and the, you know, there, nobody is demanding that every work of social media gets approved by a 55-year-old white guy who's completely out of touch with fucking everything.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Like that makes total sense. And it also, like, things are moving so quickly and it makes sense that this generation would be even more different for, like, in terms of their tastes and stuff, given that, like, the information and entertainment environment, like, ecosystem that they grew up in is totally foreign from the one that people 5 years older from them grew up in.
Right. Know? Like, you could go on TV and watch
you know, something on CNN where they're going to be talking about like, well, what really is on Hunter Biden's laptop? Or you can go on TikTok and like watch somebody make a funny sketch about like American imperialism in Asia.
Right.
And you're like, damn, this shit's fucking true and funny. And yeah. A topic that they won't discuss. Like, it's just subject matter I won't see, or all kinds of like any other sort of interest you might have is sort of either you're going to get this really mainstream sanitized version on television, or it's just not there at all. Like, you're not represented on television at all. So, of course, you know, like as consumers, younger people are like, well, I'm not interested in this, like, sort of, you know, monotone version of what, you know, reality is based on Hollywood development. Like meetings.
Right. Yeah. But I guess the problem, I don't know, what, like, people have argued that like TikTok is bad because it has like no fact checker working on it.
Sure.
And I think that's almost definitely true.
The problem with that is like half the time, like, you know, there's like the New York Times doing something just absolutely terrible.
Exactly. Which,
you know, so then, I mean, it kind of goes out the window. I mean, it is a huge problem. You know, you get kids get there, like, you know, like my son is so like, well, you know, versed in politics. It's great. Like, and he's learned it all from social media, you know, I mean, I think, but, and he's definitely formulated pretty smart opinions, at least coming from my vantage point, you know, like where they're like, they're nuanced. And he's like, yeah, obviously I don't take it at, you know, face value what I'm seeing, but I don't know if it's any better than the New York Times. I mean,
yeah, you
know,
I was going to say that like the TikTok at least is like just like firing random lies at the wall of all different going hey, in all different
chicken
directions.
And NyQuil. Okay.
The New York Times misinformation is like coordinated and all going in the same direction to the point that you are like, you could easily be mistaken into thinking like that's just reality.
Yeah. I mean, just on paper, there are plenty of campaigns on like traditional media or social media that are made to create some sentiment that isn't there for sure. But I think, yeah, it's like, what are you dealing with that's different by looking at the two? And I think, you know, one of the things that they just talk about is just if you are, because I think most people are savvy, like I guess most people that I know that are like younger and looking at TikTok seem to be pretty savvy, where they don't always just accept everything they see as like gospel truth, like that they are a little bit, you know, suspicious.
Yeah. Well, it's easier to be savvy with those two. I mean, like with the New York Times, for instance, like when I read the New York Times, I still don't understand where they're coming from. Like, you know, like I don't like what is the end goal with those guys? Like, you know, when like obviously they do a lot of great reporting, but like when there's one of these pieces that's like just absolutely like pushing this agenda, this New York Times agenda, we're all kind of like, okay, I know what this is, like they're doing it again. But then you're like, who's doing this and like why? And I don't even understand who these people are. like there isn't like a group of people who really support that other than the New York Times themselves.
It's interesting. I was thinking about this with regards to inflation, right? Because that was like a question that keeps occurring to me as they write about inflation, and the story they're telling is like not convincing, not interested. Like it doesn't really hold together. And it's like based in this world of like supply and demand where like, it's like this zero gravity theoretical world of, you know, inflation and, you know, the rates and this, and it's, like, it makes me wonder if they're pitching stories that are more grounded in reality and people's, like, day-to-day experiences and, you know, what you actually hear on earnings calls and, like, see companies doing. Like, if they're pitching those stories and somebody at the editorial level is like, no, write about how it's because people ask for too much money and raises, you know,
yeah,
or is it that all of these, I think it probably is somewhere between that and all these New York Times journalists like went to these Ivy League schools that teach you that you are like a better person, you are a higher level of person because of these like technocratic truths that you are steeped in about, like, because you took econ from like somebody who is like a world striding fucking captain of industry, and So you, like, you have very deep inside of you this connection between this overarching narrative that, like, it can all be explained with math and, you know, moving things around, and it is actually a meritocracy. Like, that kind of ties into your overall view of yourself. And so, like, at a cellular level, at a, like, journalist by journalist level, they are also, like, bought in to this idea of,
yeah, you know, and
that
also
makes sense. Like, the self-confidence that just, like, this is the way the world is, and I can't possibly see beyond that line, right? There. Yeah. I
mean, just hearing from, like, journalists of color on Twitter all the time saying the same thing. It's like they talk about the world through this worldview because the only people they recruit are coming from a similar worldview. So it doesn't even occur to question what their beliefs are. And on top of that, you're rewarded by the editor based on what your takes are. So if your take is a more employer-friendly view of the economy and not a worker-oriented view of the economy, an editor might reinforce that by being like, well, that person gets a lot of fucking work. Like, they get in the paper a lot more than I do because they're talking this way. And it's like any job where you look at, oh, my boss likes this more than this. And to stay stable in my job, there is a certain amount of, like, tailoring I will do of my own personality or interests to stay in my job, to get the plaudits that I want or the positive attention I want from my boss, et cetera. And it just kind of, and it services itself, because at the end of the day, all of these people benefit from the status quo. And there's really, like, so yeah, of course, it bend over backwards trying to normalize, like, fascist people, like, in the U.S. because, like, what are you going to do? Have a, like, a real sober analysis on, like, what the world looks like through the eyes of someone with less money, because that doesn't really happen.
When we have people on here who like guests on the show who are, like, journalists, or, like, you know, they're freelance journalists, they're people who work, like, with mainstream media outlets to, you know, produce a podcast or something, like, they work in some way in the world of nonfiction. A lot of times the sentiment, like, that they seem to give us after we, like, hit stop on the recording is, wow, so you guys can just, like, tell the truth on here. Like, that's right. Crazy. Like, it, like, that they, there's just an unspoken thing at a lot of the places that are, like, major media outlets that you have to sort of curb what you say, like, in order to get it published. Like, you need to be sort of dancing on both sides of this thing instead of just being like, no, this is fucked. I don't know why we've gotten away with it for so long, but that, it's crazy to me. Do you know who I'm, like, the examples I'm talking about, Miles?
Of course.
Like,
and I think that shows, right, that in certain spaces, like, you're just conditioned to know that in a given industry, certain topics are just, like, third rail issues.
Right.
And not to say that it's, like, third rail and that, like, it's, you know, a fatal mistake you'll make in your career, but it's something that if you engage in has consequences on some level, whether that means you may not get the kind of looks that you'd want to get into, like, a, you know, a maybe more mainstream publication, or even if you're not even necessarily dealing with news, that within a given field of study or whatever, things are just spoken about a certain way. And to run counter to that is like you become a boat rocker.
Right.
And I think we still, like, there's still many areas where, like, boat rocking is absolutely, like, a no-no, you know? And there are other places where only recently it's like, okay, let's maybe, you know, let's not completely throw someone in the rubbish pile because they're pointing out systemic racism. Like, that used to be shit you couldn't really say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at that, like, that, I'm not well-versed enough about this to talk in a recording because I can't remember that much, but, like, that New Yorker story where there was a New Yorker journalist who, I believe, the woman, I think she's a Black woman, who kind of called out the New Yorker. And I think New Yorker is just such an example of, like, oh man, like, I, you know, do trust so many people. Like, they're like, Steve Cole or Dexter Filkins. Like, there's some books of, like, New Yorker writers that I'm like, oh, those are great, you know? But, like, everybody turned on her. Like, David Remnick turned her, like, they just sold her down. Yeah, I don't know if you guys know more about that story than I do. I just remember kind of reading it on Twitter. And this is, like, the most half-assed recital of it. But like the, you know, the
this
editor
is like sold, in the last year,
like in the recently? Last like 3 months, I think, you know, like, yeah, she like she sent out like a company memo or something and then just got like,
right,
just run out, basically, you know. And it's like that's like the place where you'd be like, that wouldn't happen because those people are smart, right, and decent and wonderful. Right. Know, like, or so that, you know, yeah. I mean, a lot of people would say that. So it's just a surprise, you know, there wasn't more backing for her, you know.
Yeah, I love the New Yorker. I love telling people when I read an article in the New Yorker and talking about it and, you know, just practicing reading comprehension so I look smart. But the but they like I've had my eye on them ever since they covered Havana Syndrome with just like perfect credulity and like basically CIA talking points. I've been like, huh, like maybe there's more there than meets the eye, because they have great writers, but like that doesn't stop them from having government contacts that they trade information for, or, you know. But yeah, that does, any mainstream journalistic institution at this point, I feel like, is probably, you know, prone to this sort of thing, at least.
It's weird.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think the biggest, like, we just have this pattern in the world, especially in America, where like if there is a adjacent controversy to something that's like a truth, it's much easier to pour all your energy into the adjacent controversy than to like examine the real thing that you need to.
Yeah.
So rather than looking, having a full reckoning of, you know, the effects of white supremacy in every industry, it became about white supremacy in policing.
Right.
And then companies were able to do this thing of like, yeah, and we're getting into it too. Yeah, we're gonna check. Yeah, we're also gonna really heavily invest in this without sincerely doing it. Many places have not sincerely do it because I think there's just like this pattern of like, well, if you grapple enough with the adjacent thing, you can avoid having a real reckoning with your own shit. But absolutely, you better go all in on whatever the scandal du jour is, because if you don't put all your energy and critique into that, then you will be seen as someone who's not taking a look at the truth here. And we see this all the time. It happened even with like the Russian invasion of Ukraine. It was much easier for the media to be like, I can't believe a country would invade another country. That is absolute. Those are war crimes. This is unbelievable, while avoiding our own history as a nation doing that. The many other controversies that are comparable, but because they are not white faces, we'll just ignore it. Yeah. So again, adjacent controversy gave everybody the license to be like, yeah. And now everybody's feeling good about American foreign policy and shit because of Russia. We'll always see a thing. It can be any sport or whatever. If there's something near the truth, just go all in on that, because then you can avoid having to really look at your own shit, and then you can continue down this blind path of like repeating the same mistakes while, you know, feeling good about the little bit of attention you gave something for a couple weeks.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring the Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.